Chapter 10 The Working Day Section 1 The Limits of the Working Day We started with the supposition that labour power is bought and sold at its value. Its value, like that of all commodities, is determined by the working time necessary to its production. If the production of the average daily means of subsistence of the labourer takes up 6 hours, he must work, on the average, 6 hours every day to produce his daily labour power, or to reproduce the value received as the result of its sale. The necessary part of his working day amounts to 6 hours, and is therefore, other things being equal, a given quantity. But with this, the extent of the working day itself is not yet given. Let us assume that A to B represents the length of the necessary working time, say 6 hours. If the labour be prolonged 1, 3, or 6 hours beyond A to B to C, we have working day 1 of 7 hours, working day 2 of 9 hours, working day 3 of 12 hours. The extension B to C represents the length of the surplus labour. As the working day is A to B plus B to C, or A to C, it varies with the variable quantity B to C. Since A to B is constant, the ratio of B to C to A to B can always be calculated. In working day 1, it is 1/6 of A to B, in working day 2, 3/6, in working day 3, 6/6. Since, further, the ratio surplus working time over necessary working time determines the rate of the surplus value, the latter is given by the ratio of B to C to A to B. It amounts, in the 3 different working days, respectively, to 16 2/3, 50, and 100%. On the other hand, the rate of surplus value alone would not give us the extent of the working day. If this rate, for example, were 100%, the working day might be of 8, 10, 12, or more hours. It would indicate that the 2 constituent parts of the working day, necessary labour and surplus labour time, were equal in extent, but not how long each of these 2 constituent parts was. The working day is thus not a constant, but a variable quantity. One of its parts, certainly, is determined by the working time required for the reproduction of the labour power of the labourer himself, but its total amount varies with the duration of the surplus labour. The working day is therefore determinable, but is, per se, indeterminate. Footnote. A day's labour is vague. It may be long or short. An essay on trade and commerce, containing observations on taxes, etc. London, 1770. End of footnote. Although the working day is not a fixed but a fluent quantity, it can, on the other hand, only vary within certain limits. The minimum limit is, however, not determinable. Of course, if we make the extension B to C, or the surplus labour, equal to 0, we have a minimum limit. That is, the part of the day which the labourer must necessarily work for his own maintenance. On the basis of capitalist production, however, this necessary labour can form a part only of the working day. The working day itself can never be reduced to this minimum. On the other hand, the working day has a maximum limit. It cannot be prolonged beyond a certain point. This maximum limit is conditioned by 2 things. First, by the physical bounds of labour power. Within the 24 hours of the natural day, a man can expend only a definite quantity of his vital force. A horse, in like manner, can only work from day to day 8 hours. During part of the day this force must rest, sleep. During another part, The man has to satisfy other physical needs, to feed, wash, and clothe himself. Besides these purely physical limitations, the extension of the working day encounters moral ones. The labourer needs time for satisfying his intellectual and social wants, the extent and number of which are conditioned by the general state of social advancement. The variation of the working day fluctuates, therefore, within physical and social bounds. But both these limiting conditions are of a very elastic nature, and allow the greatest latitude. So we find working days of 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 hours, that is, of the most different lengths. The capitalist has bought the labour power at its day rate. To him its use value belongs during one working day. He has thus acquired the right to make the labourer work for him during one day. But what is a working day? Footnote. This question is far more important than the celebrated question of Sir Robert Peel to the Birmingham Chamber of Commerce. What is a pound? A question that could only have been proposed because Peel was as much in the dark as to the nature of money as the little shilling men of Birmingham. End of footnote. At all events, less than the natural day. By how much? The capitalist has his own views of this ultima thule, the outermost limit, the necessary limit of the working day. As capitalist, he is only capital personified. His soul is the soul of capital. But capital has one single life impulse, the tendency to create value and surplus value, to make its constant factor the means of production, absorb the greatest possible amount of surplus labour. Footnote. It is the aim of the capitalist to obtain with his expended capital the greatest possible quantity of labour. J. G. Courcel Sonnery, Traité théorique et pratique des entreprises industrielles, 1857. End of footnote. Capital is dead labour that, vampire-like, only lives by sucking living labour, and lives the more labour it sucks. The time during which the labourer works is the time during which the capitalist consumes the labour power he has purchased of him. Footnote. An hour's labour lost in a day is a prodigious injury to a commercial state. There is a very great consumption of luxuries among the labouring poor of this kingdom, particularly among the manufacturing populace, by which they also consume their time, the most fatal of consumptions. An Essay on Trade and Commerce, etc. End of footnote. If the labourer consumes his disposable time for himself, he robs the capitalist. Footnote. If the free labourer allows himself an instant of rest, the base and petty management which follows him with wary eyes claims he is stealing from it. En Lingue, Théorie des Lois Civiles, etc., London, 1767. End of footnote. The capitalist then takes his stand on the law of the exchange of commodities. He, like all other buyers, seeks to get the greatest possible benefit out of the use value of his commodity. Suddenly, the voice of the labourer, which had been stifled in the storm and stress of the process of production, rises. The commodity that I have sold to you differs from the crowd of other commodities in that its use creates value, and a value greater than its own. That is why you bought it. That which on your side appears a spontaneous expansion of capital is on mine extra expenditure of labour power. You and I know on the market only one law, that of the exchange of commodities. And the consumption of the commodity belongs not to the seller who parts with it, but to the buyer who acquires it. To you, therefore, belongs the use of my daily labour power. but by means of the price that you pay for it each day, I must be able to reproduce it daily and to sell it again. Apart from natural exhaustion through age, etc., I must be able on the morrow to work with the same normal amount of force, health, and freshness as today. You preach to me constantly the gospel of saving and abstinence. Good! I will, like a sensible saving owner, husband my soul wealth, labour power, and abstain from all foolish waste of it. I will each day spend, set in motion, put into action, only as much of it as is compatible with its normal duration and healthy development. By an unlimited extension of the working day, you may in one day use up a quantity of labour power greater than I can restore in three. What you gain in labour, I lose in substance. The use of my labour power and the spoliation of it are quite different things. If the average time that, doing a reasonable amount of work, an average labourer can live is 30 years, the value of my labour power, which you pay me from day to day, is 1/365 × 30, or 1/10,950 of its total value. But if you consume it in 10 years, you pay me daily 1/10,950 instead of 1/3,650 of its total value, that is, only 1/3 of its daily value, and you rob me, therefore, every day of 2/3 of the value of my commodity. You pay me for one day's labour power, whilst you use that of 3 days. That is against our contract and the law of exchanges. I demand, therefore, a working day of normal length, and I demand it without any appeal to your heart, for in money matters sentiment is out of place. You may be a model citizen, perhaps a member of the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and in the odour of sanctity to boot, but the thing that you represent face to face with me has no heart in its breast. That which seems to throb there is my own heart beating. I demand the normal working day, because I, like every other seller, demand the value of my commodity. Footnote. During the great strike of the London builders, 1860-61, for the reduction of the working day to 9 hours, their committee published a manifesto that contained, to some extent, the plea of our worker. The manifesto alludes, not without irony, to the fact that the greatest profit-monger amongst the building masters, a certain Sir M. Peto, was in the odour of sanctity. This same Peto, after 1867, came to an end, a la Strasbourg. End of footnote. We see, then, that apart from extremely elastic bounds, the nature of the exchange of commodities itself imposes no limit on the working day, no limit to surplus labour. The capitalist maintains his rights as purchaser when he tries to make the working day as long as possible, and to make, whenever possible, 2 working days out of one. On the other hand, the peculiar nature of the commodity sold implies a limit to its consumption by the purchaser, and the labourer maintains his right as seller when he wishes to reduce the working day to one of definite normal duration. There is here, therefore, an antimony, right against right, both equally bearing the seal of the law of exchanges. Between equal rights, force decides. Hence is it that in the history of capitalist production, the determination of what is a working day presents itself as the result of a struggle between collective capital, that is, the class of capitalists, and collective labour, that is, the working class.